welcome back to another episode of Exposing Ourselves. This is the show where we expose each other to new things. Matt, a big music fan, will expose me to one of his favorite bands every week, and I will give him one of my favorite movies, and we come together on this very podcast to discuss it all. And with me, as always, is my very good friend,
Matt Rundquist. Hey, Travis, how's the weather up there on the high wire? Yes, that's right, folks. He didn't use a script that time.
I was trying to do the intro from memory today.
Yeah, pretty good. Hey, last week I watched the movie Knives Out, and you listened to the album Funeral from the Arcade Fire.
Uh-huh, the Arcade Fire. I certainly did. This is an interesting, I think it's an interesting pairing. So we will get to it. But before we do, Matt, how was your week, my friend?
My week was pretty good. This last weekend, I was an instructor for Ladies Rock, which is the adult equivalent of the camp that I did last summer, Girls Rock. Uh-huh. This is where adult women get together and in only 2 days write a song. So they'll typically pick up an instrument for the first time, write a song, and perform it on stage at a local, it's a club slash restaurant, bar, brewery thing here in Milwaukee. So there were 6 bands. They each did a song. So the performance ended up being about an hour. But I'm so impressed with these women and their ability to go up on stage and, like, conquer the fear of performing and do it on, like, the most minimal of, like, instruction. And they just go for it. And it's really inspiring and awesome.
That's me. Now, explain to me just for a second. You said pick up an instrument for the first time. It's not the first time they've used this instrument, right?
Oh, yes. For a lot of them, it is. It's not required to be or anything like that, but many of them are picking. So every band is guitar, bass, drums, keyboards, and vocals, although we were short a keyboardist. So it's typically 5 members, and they choose which instrument they want to do, and they typically get their first or second choice. And some of them have done it at a previous year of Ladies Rock. Some of them have never touched the instrument before. Some of them have some experience, right? Like, I know one of the – so I taught bass, and one of my 6 students had been doing like online – you know, working her way through an online class.
Wow.
So she had a little bit of ability before coming in. But they are all, you know, just doing the best they can. And it's really, really impressive. It's a lot of fun.
Doubly impressive, yeah. Because, I mean, there's a fear of going on stage and doing something in front of people. But doing it when you aren't sure of your skills on a certain instrument is crazy. That's amazing. I love that.
Yeah, yeah. And it's one thing to do it as a child, right? So that's what they do in Girls Rock, although they get a whole week there. But it's still not a ton of instruction. But they're, you know, kids are fearless a lot of the time, right?
We haven't learned shame yet.
Yeah, they don't know what they don't know. But for adult women to do this, I'm very, very impressed and honored to be a teacher for them. And I also kind of run around with gear and make sure that everybody has what they need on stage and that sort of thing.
That's super cool. And I can see how that's very rewarding for you then to teach, you know, to have that quick turnaround and see the results of your impact.
Absolutely.
Really fast.
Yeah. It's really, really fun. Other than that, you know, just practicing my instrument, we're getting geared up for the release of Stain on April 26th, so I'll probably do a little preview of the song next episode. So you guys will get
a very special episode.
Yeah, on our very special episode, you guys will get to hear the song before it officially comes out on the streaming platforms. I'm really excited by it. I hope you guys like it, and that'll be the official debut of Tea Service. I have what appears to be a full band, maybe, of Tea Service. We haven't gotten together yet or anything, but I have recruited a bassist and a guitarist, and Amy, I think, is going to sing rather than me because she's a better singer than I am. Yeah, thank you for that. And then I'm going to actually play drums, I think. I'm really enjoying this drumming journey, and I think I'm just going to see how far I can ride it.
In my head, I have this vision of you putting together a band, like an Ocean's 11 type of thing, where it's a little bit like that.
Yeah.
We have a montage of you approaching people, and they see you, and they go, "Matt Rundquist, you son of a bitch!" And you're like, "Oh my God, I need a band."
That is a great idea. Do you want to shoot it?
Yeah, sure.
Actually, can we storyboard it? And then I've got a friend here in Milwaukee who can shoot it for us if we storyboard it. All right, guys, we're going to do that offline. We're not going to do that on the podcast. But anyways, so that's my week. Travis, what you got?
For me, Sugar premiered, which is
Cool. That's right. I'm sorry for not mentioning that. Yeah. Also this week, I sat on my couch and watched Sugar and really enjoyed it. And a friend of mine showed up, had no idea.
Right in the middle of the episode. So it's funny because I've been trying to tell people about it, but then there are also people I don't. Or I haven't reached, I guess, who are coming to me and being like, "Hey, I watched this new show, and there you are." And I'm like, "Yeah, there I am."
And yeah, it's number one on the service this week. So
exactly, it's gotten. First of all, it's crazy the amount of marketing that Apple is doing for this show. I mean, it makes sense because it has a huge cast, right? And it's kind of a prestige show. And it's different in a very interesting way. When I watched the first episode, it's shot in a very interesting way with more handheld and more like ultra wide lenses than you would kind of expect. And so that was interesting. And so I've been getting people reaching out to me and saying that they love the show and they also really loved my performance in it, which is weird for me because to me it's, I don't want to say it's a nothing performance. It was a fine performance, but to me it doesn't have anything special because this guy that I played is just a guy. Like, he wasn't a time traveler. He wasn't a SETI scientist. He was just a dude. Like, he was like me. And so it doesn't feel to me like acting, right? Although a lot of people have been very complimentary about my, I'm going to say, quote-unquote, performance.
I mean, getting paid to not act is also nice, you know?
Yeah.
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 Like, to not have to, like...
I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
I mean, I
like... You said it doesn't feel like acting,
Well, yeah. And you know what? I mean, this is maybe a little too psychological, going into the depths of my psyche than maybe most people listening are expecting. But one of the reasons I got into acting in the first place was because of my desire and love of becoming someone else, right? And specifically, not being me, because I used acting as an escape a lot of times, and so I guess. It's a weird dichotomy to play.
It's weird to be acting and not be escaping something.
But it is interesting to see all the posters and billboards and, like, working at the Apple store where they have this giant screen. And I've, in the 6 months that I've been there, they've never advertised another show, like, on the screen that I've noticed. But this one, they've got just full on, posters on this giant screen in the Apple Store. If anybody's been to an Apple Store in the last couple of weeks, you'll have seen it.
Now, and I remember you shot this quite a while ago, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was like a year and a half ago, and it should have come out last year, but the strike pushed it back.
The strike pushed it back, but also, I mean, do you feel like they wanted to make sure that they had the full force of the marketing, you know, juggernaut behind it to make sure it didn't, like, hit the ground and just go sploosh, you know?
Well, yeah, but I think
they just not finished the first season by the time the strike happened?
Yeah. I think that they probably hadn't finished. I think that they probably... Well, so the strike, you remember, started in, like, June, end of June, I think. And but the thing of it is, Hollywood expected it. So there was a slowdown starting well in advance of the strike. And so if this thing was supposed to have come out, let's say, in May of last year, almost a year ago, it is conceivable that Apple would have pushed it back and back and back because they knew they weren't going to be producing anything for most of the year. So, there was a big lead time for how the strike impacted the release of different projects. So that's what happened here. But it's getting great reviews. Everybody seems to really love it, and it's certainly interesting and it's different. I haven't watched the whole. Well, nobody's watched the whole thing yet, except reviewers, I guess, because it's. Like they should, they're releasing it weekly. So right now, only the first two episodes are out.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway,
yeah.
So
yeah.
That happened, and that's been really nice, a little bit reaffirming for me. I don't know if I mentioned that my agent let me know that she is landing at a new agency. So
no, you did not say that. So are you hoping to stay with her?
Yeah, so she's keeping me with her, bringing me to this new agency that is, and I probably can't say more about it, but that's nice. So that's a little bit of a relief for me, and because I really like her. My agent is really great, has been getting me things. Like this Sugar role, for example, is not from a casting director that I had ever met before in a workshop or a class or anything like that. So it was nice to be able to, and it was a big casting agency, so to be able to get into that. That's credit to my agent. So anyway, the weather is beautiful. I've gone on a couple hikes. It's today the first day I've made iced coffee. So I'll show that for the people who are watching on the live stream or on the YouTube. And so I'm really excited about having my iced coffee for the first time. And this is my first sip.
Oh, well, that's wonderful. You know, I did also forget to mention we had the big eclipse here yesterday. And I got to see that.
Yes, how was
that,
your view of that?
It was really good. It was nice and sunny, and you know, we had plenty of eclipse classes at work to pass around, so we all got to see it. This is not an original thought by any means, but it is incredible how much light the sun produces that it can be 90% covered, and basically if you don't know that it's happening, you probably wouldn't even notice.
Right.
Right.
Yes.
It's like you're wearing sunglasses. So like for me, who's very light sensitive, it feels like comfortable when I'm outside and it's sunny rather than me squinting. Right.
Yeah.
That's the difference.
Yeah.
And that's just incredible to me, that just the amount of energy that the sun releases. And of course, as
all
you know,
it releases all the energy. That's
all the energy.
Thing.
And it's only a mid-sized star. So really... Yeah. Let's get going on that whole fusion thing, because we need
energy. You probably are, but there is some big stuff happening with fusion. It's so exciting right now.
It feels like it might be out of reach, man. I sure hope it's coming sooner than later,
because
we really need it to turn things around here. But anyways.
Well, anyway, just real quick on the eclipse. I didn't think that LA was going to have much eclipse at all, because you know, in all the maps, you have the totality and then you have the like partial eclipse, and we were outside of that map line, and so I did actually go. I got a pair of eclipse glasses from Bill Nye himself.
Excellent.
And that was pretty cool, and so I took them outside, and it was just like a little bite had been taken out of the sun, but it was so cool. And there, and I watched the live stream from NASA on YouTube, which was also incredible. Like, I am so amazed at how when the moon covered it, you can see the sunspots flying off the side, the edges
solar
of the
flares,
sun.
Yeah.
The solar flares, that's what I meant. And also the ridges of the moon, like the, you know, you're seeing the mountains of the moon. It's crazy. And... But there
the
is
Mountains
something...
of the Moon is a great name for an album.
Mountains of the Moon, that is a great name. Yeah, you can have that. But I will say that I was reading a thing about how some school or other was canceling. They were so concerned about students looking at the sun that they canceled their live, like going out to look at the sun, look at the eclipse, which I feel like is a very shame, because this happens so rarely. And if your school is in the path of totality, there is something so different about seeing it in person with your own eyes and seeing it online, like watching a live stream. And so even just me seeing the little bite out of the sun through my eclipse glasses was just, it does something to your brain that is, I think, super remarkable. So anyway, that was good. That was a really cool experience.
It really was. Really
was. Many of our people got a chance to experience it too.
Hey, you know what was another really cool experience this week?
What?
You exposed yourself to me.
Well, I did. Well,
yeah.
Yeah, we do that every week.
Yeah, we do that every week. What do you say we get into the meat of the episode, Travis?
Yeah, let's get to the meat.
Guys, it took him a little while to catch up to me there. He was like, what are you talking about?
I was like, yeah, sure. So what do you say we shake things up and do the, let's do the music first.
Yeah, let's do the music first. And sometimes we do the music first because I'm concerned that you're going to have a negative reaction. This time, I just want to find out what your reaction is. I could easily see you giving this a 2 or a 3. If you give it a 1, I'm going to be upset. But I could easily see you giving this a 2 or 3. I could also see you giving this a 10. I have no idea what your reaction is going to be to this.
I'm tingling with anticipation. I'm sure some of our listeners are too. So tell us all about Arcade Fire.
So Arcade Fire is a band from the early 2000s. I'm not sure what you call this genre. They became really big in the alternative space. This is really, really big music in the alternative space. This is their debut album, and it's got like a lot of orchestral elements. There's strings all over this thing. A lot of big emotions, and I just like it, right? I like emotional music, and that's what this is. So I think there's vocals on this that are going to maybe grate on you a little bit, and then there's vocals on this that you're going to really, really love. And I think it's all part of the same package, which is like evoking a sense of nostalgia and longing and love and life. And I just really dig it. They're a pretty big band, obviously, because I think the strings are considered like part of the Arcade Fire. And fun fact, a friend of mine here in Milwaukee went to school with the lead singer of Arcade Fire in like elementary school. I didn't know that. She was like, yeah, I went to school with a Grammy winner. And I was like, oh, who's that? And she's like, oh, blah, blah, blah from Arcade Fire. And I was like, huh. I had no idea. Yeah.
Where was that?
Texas.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. The band itself is, I think they're Canadian, actually. So I don't know that whole story. Guys, I got to admit, I usually do a little bit of research on the bands, and this week I just kind of didn't. I just know that I really like the Arcade Fire, and especially this album and the album after it.
So I'm looking.
What do you think, Travis?
I'm really curious. A couple times you've called it the Arcade Fire.
Is it just Arcade Fire?
It's just Arcade Fire.
I'm sorry, guys.
That's all right.
Edit all those "thes" out. I meant to just say Arcade Fire.
Note to the editor. Note to the producer. Just edit those out.
That's how little research I did this week. I forgot the band is just called Arcade Fire.
Yeah. Well. So you asked the question, and I'll go ahead and answer it. I think that. This album, so I talk a lot about my experience frequently, my experience of listening to an album. And I think that this is one of the fun things about this project, this show of ours, is that it really is, I take a journey every time I listen to a new band. And I do like that experience, right? Setting aside just the experience of the listening to a certain band, the experience for me of going on these journeys is really interesting and really fun. And it's learning a new thing and just expanding my mind a little bit. So I had another new experience listening to this band, new and kind of different. And I think before I really dive into it, I will say that there were a lot of ups and downs listening to this album. And I was, one of the questions I asked myself was, and you answered, you said that this is their first album. Would you call this their best album?
I don't know. It's definitely the most cohesive. Like, I feel this album is a story. And I am partial to stories.
That's interesting.
You know, albums
that you say
have stories.
Yeah.
Right?
That's interesting that you say that because, what I'll say is I think that this album is marred a bit by heightened expectations, right? And I will say the first high expectation that it sets is the name of the band, which is great. like Arcade Fire is inarguably a amazing name for a band. And I think that I fully expected to be familiar with more of their music. Like, just in the background of my life, somehow having heard something from Arcade Fire at some point. And not only was I not familiar with really any of the songs from this album, but I went back and looked at their biggest songs on YouTube Music, which is what we use to listen to our playlists. And you can find our playlist, by the way, in the show notes if you want to listen along with us either to next week's assignments or this week's albums. But I also was not really familiar with any of their biggest songs from any of their albums. So, so that was interesting to me. So
yeah, it's interesting. I just want to get into that a little bit. Yeah. It's funny because for a certain type of music fan, Arcade Fire is huge, right? They're right up there. Apparently they went to, like, the launch of the Tidal music streaming service. Like, they were one of the bands that was like a big part of the launch of that when Jay-Z launched Tidal.
Tidal.
And, and yet, you know, there's also a lot of people out there that have never been exposed to any Arcade Fire at all.
Yeah.
It's very niche and also very popular.
And I was absolutely aware of the name, which oftentimes is not the case with us, you know, when you ask that question. I'm like, have never heard of these people. But Arcade Fire, I definitely had heard of. And so, okay. So, playing the actual album, the other raised expectation came because this album starts beautifully. It starts almost magically, and the when you say it tells a story, my first thought when this started was it sounds like a fairy tale. The beginning of the album sounds like a story, like an actual story being told. And so I really, it set my expectations very high. I mean, talking the first 10 seconds of listening, 10, 15 seconds. And I don't think it quite met them. I did listen to this album three times.
Interesting.
Yeah, because I really wanted to give it a shake. And I also, in listening to our last week's episode, you said something about how this album rewards repeat listening. And so I did want to give it a shake, especially two things happened. We delayed our recording this week a little bit by a couple days. And so it gave me extra time. And also just I had, you know, I like to be fresh, so I like to listen to it the last time a little bit before, just closer to when we're recording, right? So I listened to it today for the third time. And it does improve on repeated listenings, so I'll give you that. There are some things about the vocals, as you said, that annoyed me. Mainly that they're not really vocal forward. You know, I can't.
Yeah, he's not an enunciator either.
Yeah.
There's a lot of like round sounds that if you follow along with the lyrics, you're like, okay, yeah, I can see how he's saying that. But if you're trying to parse out the lyrics without knowing what they are, you're not going to get them.
Right. So I will say, this album has a ton of musicality to it, right? The instruments and the writing and the orchestration of the music is pretty fantastic. And there's also a lot of variety to the types of songs. So your brain never gets bored or kind of numb to the type of music. So in that regard, it's also kind of a good story listening through it. There's no bangers on this album. There's nothing that I was super excited to hear.
Ooh,
every time.
That's a little harsh. Not Crown of Love or Wake Up.
I mean,
the two songs right in the middle of the album.
I don't know.
Gosh,
not
okay.
to me. And,
I would have considered those bangers. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, and just nothing I was super excited to hear again when it came up, you know, or that I found myself to be especially enjoying, like that, like those songs that would end up being singles out of an album, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, like I'm looking here, like Wake Up has 37 million plays. Rebellion has 37 million plays. So there's some pretty popular songs on here.
Okay. All right, I mean,
and that's
just
on
enough,
YouTube Music, you know?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Anyway, sorry. You, for you, no bangers. That's fair.
No, no. And there are a couple of things that bugged me. And one of them is the... So last week's band had really great poetry, right? The writing of the songs, of the lyrics was great. And you know me. I really love a well-written... song, and I don't mean the music. I mean I like a song that has well written lyrics, and yeah. And then lyrics you can actually hear. And this I think lacked kind of on both of those counts. And in one song there was a bit where they're very repetitive. And you know I've also kind of railed against songs for being repetitive, and I can't. I think it is.
No, I know that that read is actually fair for a lot of this music. There is a lot of these songs that repeat. I was actually just listening to this today as well. And like there's one drum part, and it's funny because I'm learning drums. I'm sort of focused in on the drum parts. But like the drum part doesn't change for like the whole 5-minute song. Right.
Right.
Over and over and over again, right? And that can put you into kind of a meditative state, or it can just bore you, depending on, you know, where you're at mentally.
Yeah, the song Rebellion has a line where he goes, every time you close your eyes, and I found myself today on my hike listening to it, and I counted, and he repeats the line 8 times, and I think that's at least 4 times too many. But... The next song, the last song in the back seat, was actually pretty good, and it starts with the line, it says, I'm looking at the lyrics right now for the first time. It says, I like the peace in the back seat, and what I heard was, I like the beast in the back seat, which I thought was really
that's
poetic.
That's a better line. Yeah.
Right, and also what I'm going to refer to Coco as from now on, she's just the beast in the back seat. But here's my last read on this before I toss it back to you, and that is that there was a lot of building of stuff, of tension, of energy with no payoff, right? And so I would feel like there was this building of and like you're doing this kind of driving build, and then they wouldn't pay it off with anything, with a huge chorus or a huge release of energy or something. And
I think that's a really insightful thought, Travis. It does do that, where it's like we said, talked about, there's a lot of minimalism, you know, repeating the same figures over and over again, and maybe adding in an instrument or adding a series of instruments to sort of build. There are not really what, you know, dance musicians call drops in this album, where all of a sudden it's like, boom, here we go, right? They do kind of build tension and don't necessarily release it. And in the right circumstances, that can be kind of fun, but... it doesn't. I could definitely see why that might just make someone tense, right?
yeah. So. And I think that that especially as a pairing with our movie today is going to be a really interesting comparison, because both play with that building of tension, and you know, I think
it's sort
in
of
this
like.
Case,
yeah, I feel like it's sort of like walking along a beautiful cliff edge in like. England or Ireland, where you're just like, there's the ocean and I can see it and I'm getting like uplifted, but I'm also like separated, and there's not like a moment where you like jump off the cliff and go into the water. You just like eventually walk back into town.
Well, you know? climbing a hill, right? And you're climbing and you're climbing, you're climbing, and you just never get to the peak, right? And get that gorgeous view. And so
yeah,
that's kind of what I felt about this album. And so My score is actually going to be kind of middling because of those reads, although it's not bad.
So do you remember Godspeed You Black Emperor? It's the really long song that I gave you that one time where I had you listen to
I listened to it on the top of a mountain. Yeah.
There's a little bit of a connection between that band and this one just because they were both in the Montreal music scene at the same time and they both did sort of epic sounding music.
Sure.
And people do connect them a little bit, although this is far more accessible of a type of music than what they did. But I think that band is a lot better at, like, building and releasing tension rather than just sort of, like, almost, and never mind, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I just wish I'd had that.
Yeah, we're kind of burning through time here. What do you, do you want to give it a rating?
I will, and I think, I was waffling between a few different numbers. It was almost getting a higher rating today than I think I'm going to land on, but I think I'm going to give a 6.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
It wasn't bad.
That's funny because I said 2 to 10, so you landed right in the middle.
I definitely am somewhere in between there, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
How about you?
I think this is probably an 8 for me. At one point in my life, this was probably a 10 album for me. Mm. I really, really listened to the heck out of this album a lot. And I think it was interesting for me to come back to it this week and listen to it another couple of times and finding my attention wandering a little bit and maybe just not connecting with it in the way that I did when it originally came out. So for me, I like it a lot, right? But it's no longer at that level of like, this is one of the best things I've ever heard. It's a little below that. So it's an 8 for me.
All right. Great. Great. All right. 6 and 8. Pretty good.
Tell me about Knives Out.
Oh, man. Well, so Knives Out is a 2019 movie, I believe, from Rian Johnson, who we have all experienced so far with Looper. And he also did a movie that we've talked about. He did the second of the new Star Wars trilogy movies, which was The Last Jedi. And this movie is a mystery film, full on murder mystery in the classic sense. But it's got an amazing ensemble cast. So Daniel Craig arguably stars as the detective of the movie, Benoit Blanc, who is an original private detective character. But you've got Chris Evans, Ana de Armas, Jamie Lee Curtis, Michael Shannon, Don Johnson, Toni Collette, Lakeith Stanfield, Christopher Plummer is in there too as the victim, and I had only seen this movie once. And I told you last week that I avoided watching it because we were coming off of The Last Jedi, which I didn't like. And so I kind of had a low opinion of Rian Johnson as a writer-director. And this really cemented him in my mind as someone who has a real talent at writing and directing. And there is so much to love about this movie. I really liked that even watching it the second time, I couldn't tell who the murderer was or what the twist was going to be. And so I ended up going, I just really enjoyed the whole experience of watching this movie. The characters are so well cast and so well defined, like each red herring and each character's little motivation is enjoyable and fun to watch. The editing is fun, where they cut back and forth between, like, when they're doing interviews with each of the suspects, I guess. They cut them up in an interesting way, but each one leads to more information. It's a very efficiently written and shot movie. It's funny, Ana de Armas, who is the, I want to say the relative newcomer here, was also a very experienced actress by the time she got to this movie, but she maybe knew to Hollywood movies, right? She'd done a lot of Mexican language, Spanish language movies in Mexico. And but it was funny to see her really hold her own against these powerhouse actors.
Right, because there's kind of, you referred to Benoit Blanc as the protagonist, but there's really two protagonists in this movie. The two, Daniel Craig and Ana de Armas, really carry the movie, and we're sort of getting their stories as they intertwine for this case.
Right, yeah. It's Ana de Armas's, like, character that is the center of everything. And I guess Daniel Craig's character as the detective just kind of, like, pieces the story together rather than being part of the story. And so that also is an interesting thing to look at, how the detective of a murder mystery actually plays a role in the story. It's they're not the star, even though they are probably the connecting tissue between every sequel and every other version of the story that we're going to get. It's going to be a Daniel Craig series, but he's not the star. Well, he wasn't in this movie. He maybe kind of is in the next one.
Yeah.
What'd you think, Matt?
Yeah, I dug this. I dug it a lot, given that I'm not typically a murder mystery person. My wife is one of those women who absolutely loves the BBC murder mystery shows. She's watched all of the Midsummer Murders and all of the Murder in Paradise. And
it's funny, and, my ex you know, used
they're
to love
on,
those too.
They're on when I'm around, but I'm never drawn into them. Right?
Yeah. Me too.
I did really dig this. You know, I liked it a lot. I didn't get sucked into it, right? But I think that's because I do have this sort of philosophy about these types of movies, which is, yeah, I mean, of course you tricked me. You showed me information that you had that I didn't, in the way that you wanted to show it to me. Like, of course you're able to mislead me. It doesn't feel like an impressive directorial trick to surprise me, right? But this movie, the way it sets it up, where about a little before halfway of the movie, we get Ana de Armas' story of what she thinks happened that night. And it appears to describe very clearly what occurred and why she's guilty. And so the rest of the movie, you're wondering, what is the fundamental conflict here? Because the way these are usually set up, you don't find out who the killer is until the very end, right?
Right.
But here we're sort of explicitly given, like, she's the one. She did it. And so then when Benoit Blanc at the end of the movie starts protecting her and keeping her from confessing things that he doesn't want her to confess, It is a little jarring, and it's an interesting twist, and I think it's worthwhile and paid off and set up correctly. So I really dug that. The characters are really well drawn. Like, you understand kind of who everyone is. I'm a big fan of movies having, like, the obviously evil guy actually be the one who did it, and that's what this movie does, right? Because they set up, you know, everybody thinks the one son is a wastrel and he's a jerk and nobody likes him. And it turns out when he does show up, he's kind of a jerk, although he's nice to Ana de Armas and we end up realizing why that is, right? But, you know, your initial instinct is to go, well, it can't be him. He's obviously the one because he's a jerk. And then it ends up being him. And I'm like, I really like that as a story. Because let's be honest, a lot of times you can tell who the jerk is in the room and they are responsible for the bad stuff that happens, you know?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I like that this movie is like, yeah, no, it was definitely him.
Yeah. And they have a couple of plot points that are very interesting. Like, they give Ana de Armas' character this crutch, I guess, where she can't lie without vomiting. And it's just such a weird thing to give a character, and so, like, story dependent, right? But what an interesting way to have a character that doesn't lie, and then use that as a way to move the story forward. I liked
almost everything about that. The only thing that I didn't really love that was the sort of visceral vomit on Chris Evans at the end. I was like, she could have just vomited into the garbage can and that would have been okay there. She didn't have to.
Well, she had to hold it for so long. She had to wait to hold it to the very last second. The only thing I didn't like about that moment was, and it's kind of a thing I liked, but then also didn't, was that he pulls a knife off of this beautiful knife sculpture that they've had in this room and they've showcased several times and they used to great effect. But he pulls a random knife off of it and it turns out to be a prop knife that he tries to kill her with. Mm-hmm. And it is clearly not the case that every knife on that sculpture is a prop knife. You can see them and there's just no way. So he just happened to grab the right one, but they play it because it's also a callback to something Christopher Plummer's character says early on.
Yeah. That he couldn't tell the difference between a real knife and a prop knife.
Exactly. But the only reason, like, it was pure luck.
Yeah, why didn't you like that?
It's just because it was pure luck that he grabbed the prop knife, right? If they had all been prop knives.
I don't know how else you would do that, right? Like, because you are trying to recall that moment, and you know, it does the classic thing of planting information that ends up being very important that you think is just a throwaway line.
Right. And I like that.
Yeah. And so if they're all prop knives, then it doesn't, I don't think it works nearly as well. Right.
Okay. Yeah.
You could have grabbed a knife and stabbed her if you knew how to do that thing. Right.
I suppose.
Because he never, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say there was one, the only other tiny read that I had is that there were some monologues in here that were forgettable. They were like monologues in order to be monologues in order to deliver a punchline at the end. And the punchline was the only important line. And so like Christopher Plummer's monologue about the prop knife, the whole monologue went by. And then you only get that line about the prop knife, and that's
But isn't that also paying off the suicide? Like that line is also informing the suicide thing, that she knows that he's holding a real knife to his neck when he's about to commit suicide, and she doesn't know if he's going to go through with it or not. So I don't know.
It was the monologue. It wasn't this. It wasn't the because again. The punchline, the end line of the monologue is important in two different ways, it turns out. Yeah. But I don't remember anything that he said before it, right?
That's certainly fair. Yeah. That's certainly fair.
Anyway, but otherwise, I loved a lot of the dialogue, the way the characters interact with each other. And when you have a good eight characters all interacting, I even love the two cops. Like, they're different. One of them happens to be a huge fan of this writer that they're investigating the death of, and that's an interesting kind of take.
I want to call out the production design on this movie. I think it was it was really, really beautiful to watch this movie. It's a little bit of a fishbowl movie. Almost all of it is within this one house. And so therefore the location ends up being super duper important, right? It's gotta stand as a character on its own, and it absolutely does. I really, really dug basically everything about the production design. And you know, the knife sculpture, like when you first see it, you're like, what the heck is that? And then you're like, well, the guy's a mystery writer, he's very late in his career, he's got all kinds of weird art that you accumulate as an author over the course of your career when you make a lot of money and are very popular. You know, we have no idea if this is something that he commissioned, if a fan made it for him, if it's a prop from a movie. Do we find out what it was?
I think it was a it had to do with the promotional for one of his books, which was called Something Knives Something.
Sure. Yeah. And right. The point is the authors end up with stuff like the bric-a-brac around their houses. Yes. And there's all kinds of that. I thought that it did a really good job. I I've called out like sort of the color correction on movies lately and how it can be like really far in one direction. This does a really good job of seeming cohesive without being like, and then we just slammed a brown filter over everything. Mm-hmm. You know, it's really dig it. It does feel like it a nice update of like the Clue style movie, right?
Yeah.
Just with like modern production values.
Yeah.
I dug that a lot.
That's very cool. Yeah, I like that too. And it's beautifully shot. Everything is specific and means something. The things that people wear, the things that they're interacting with and holding, and I really dug that. The specificity of this movie really pays off.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Honestly, I think what this does for me is it indicates that I am officially a Rian Johnson fan.
Because I
don't think I've seen one of his movies that I didn't really like, because of course I feel differently about TLJ than you do.
Sure. And we have one more of his movies on my list, one of his early movies that we'll get to maybe probably by the end of the year. And
If the Knives Out sequel is not on your list, maybe I'll watch that on my own, because
it is
I
not
really
on my list. I will say I'll just go ahead and say here, I didn't like it as much. It's a fine enough movie. I just don't think it is it holds up to scrutiny quite like this one does.
Do you remember what it's called?
It's called The Glass Onion.
Glass Onion. Okay.
And it was
I'll
a Netflix exclusive. So I think it was it's on Netflix, like produced by Netflix, which is weird. Like, how was the sequel to this movie not big enough for some studio to want to make? Like, this movie, I'll tell you what it made. It had a budget of $40 million, and it made $311 million.
That's a pretty big success.
Right. Yeah. So, how does some studio not? I guess Netflix.
Well, I'll be honest. I don't understand streaming service accounting at all.
No, nobody does.
I fully confess that I have no idea how anybody gets paid for streaming service stuff. So,
yeah.
Any other
big things reads or compliments that you want to pay before you give it a rating?
Ana de Armas really does carry this movie. It's funny because I've seen her name come up a few times for various things over the last few years, but I've never caught her in anything. I think she had like a sexy movie with, I want to say, Ben Affleck or something.
She did one of the James Bond movies right after this.
She did a James Bond movie with Daniel Craig
right after this.
Yeah, and so her name has always come up in that context, but I didn't really know who she was, and this is a heck of a performance, so it's a great way to be introduced to her. So,
right. Yeah, totally. I agree. All right. Well, go ahead and give it a rating.
I got to give it a rating.
Yes, you do. Oh, she was also in Blade Runner 2049.
It's definitely not a 10, and it's definitely not lower than a 7, 8 or 9. I really do. You know, honestly, this is as high of a rating as a mystery movie is ever going to get from me. I'm going to give it a 9.
Great.
Yeah, I really dug
10.
It.
Why definitely not a 10?
Because this is not my kind of thing.
Okay.
Like, I enjoyed it a lot, but you tricked me. Congratulations, you know?
It's okay.
You knew the answer and I didn't.
Okay. That's every movie, but okay.
Right? Yeah. Well.
great. Okay, I'll accept that. A 9 is a nice high score. I think I am going to give this a 10 because I have no real problem with it, and I enjoyed so much about the experience of watching it, and I will absolutely come back and watch it again.
Well, Christopher Plummer dies, so that's a negative thing right there.
Is it? I don't know. No, what's funny is I had an interaction with Christopher Plummer when he came to the University of Minnesota that soured him a bit.
Oh, you're kidding.
Oh,
my.
Did I ever tell you about that? That's
Spill
probably
the tea,
not a story
my
I should
dear.
Tell on the. I'll maybe tell you later.
An unnamed experienced actor came to the. No, I'm kidding, of course. All right. Well, we'll catch that offline then, too. Mm-hmm. What do you. So you gave it a 10. That's fantastic.
10 for
a
me.
A 6, an 8, a 9, and a 10 today. Scores all over the place this week.
Nice.
But all positive.
Yeah, so, as should be the case with a show that ostensibly is about our favorite things. So I like
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
All right.
Hey. Except next week. Yeah, next week it's not about our favorite things, Travis. Next week is a very special episode.
Oh, my God.
So I sure hope you remembered and that you have something picked out for next week.
I have honestly, my list of movies for very special episodes is almost longer than my list of movies for regular episodes now.
All right, so just to remind our listening audience, every 10 episodes, we have a very special episode where neither of us has either heard the music or watched the movie before. I try to go for things that are sort of considered classics, but for whatever reason, I've never listened to them. Travis is a little more scattershot, I think. What's your philosophy for choosing these, Travis?
They're just stuff you wanted to see? It's just something that I haven't seen that I've heard amazing things about. That's all.
Okay. Well, Travis, for you, have you ever heard of Bon Iver or Bon Iver or Bon Iver?
Like that just sparked a little thing in my brain. I feel like I've heard of it.
So Bon Iver is a sort of acoustic folk band, but it's kind of a solo project. It's a little hard to get the thing. Justin Vernon is, however, from Eau Claire, Wisconsin, and he recorded this album called For Emma Forever Ago, and It is the debut. It's 9 tracks, 37 minutes long, and it's supposed to be absolutely amazing. I actually went back and forth. There's Bon Iver and there's Iron and Wine, and they're both known for a very, like, quiet, gentle sort of acoustic folk, and I couldn't decide between them until I did. And I chose the one that had a Wisconsin connection. So
nice.
Bon Iver, For Emma, Forever Ago.
Nice. Well, I teased this a while ago when it was, I don't know why it was inappropriate at the, I think it wasn't a very special episode and I was just going to give it to you, even though I have not seen this movie. But I want to assign us the best movie of all time. That is what this movie has been called. This
Citizen
movie has
Kane.
Been called.
Oh, sorry. Citizen I'm guessing. Kane. I guessed yeah. Citizen Kane and Casablanca.
Nope. I've never seen Casablanca, and I probably won't unless you assign it to me for our extra very super special episode. But I want us to watch Paddington 2.
Paddington 2, the best movie
Paddington
of all time.
2 has, last time I checked, like 100% or very close score on Rotten Tomatoes. And it has been called a perfect movie. I don't know. I have never seen Paddington 1. I think I'm going to probably watch Paddington 1 before I watch Paddington 2 because I'm a bit of a completist. And you are welcome to do the same. You and listeners may watch both movies. Here's the thing. I've heard that Paddington 1 is a great movie. But Paddington 2 is supposedly
better.
Perfect. So, yeah.
Well, I do
I don't
remember
know much about it.
Yeah, I do remember loving Paddington Bear the show when I was a kid. So.
Yeah, me too. And for all of those reasons, this should not be good because it's never good when you take our beloved childhood and turn it into a CGI live action, film. But this has, I believe, Hugh Laurie, isn't it? But this is off the top of my head. I haven't pre-researched it because I want to go in as kind of blank as I can. But I'm very intrigued because I've been hearing about this
movie
for years.
This should be a good one. I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, great. Okay, I'm excited too. Great. We'll talk about it next week.
Yeah. Hey, Travis, if people want to talk to us about anything, any thoughts they might have on the episode, how do they do that?
Well, you can reach out to us by emailing us. It's probably a really great way at exposingourselvespodcast@gmail.com. And if you like, you can also find us on our Facebook page, which is just Exposing Ourselves, and find one of our posts, which should theoretically be starting up again soon. I've been very bad about posting. I'm sorry.
I posted something this week asking for opinions about Bon Iver versus Iron and Wine, but nobody responded, so I just guessed.
Oh, great. Okay. Well, I hope that you got something. We did get an email from a listener who suggested a movie that I haven't seen yet. So I haven't decided whether I'm going to watch this movie. Have you ever seen Gosford Park, by the way?
I don't think so.
Okay, great. I believe it's a murder mystery, but that's just, again, a guess. But I've never seen it. So I have to decide whether or not I'm going to watch it and then assign it to you if I like it, or take the risk of assigning it to you for a very special episode, which then just serves to add a movie to our very special episode list, which is, as I said, pretty long already.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's how people can reach us. That was a long answer.
Awesome. Well, hey, Travis.
Uh-huh.
Thank you for exposing yourself to me.
Oh, Matt, thank you for exposing yourself to me. I've enjoyed it.
Bye-bye.